Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Everybody, this is Natalie, also known as StarsCast. I know I say the same thing every week, so if you don't know who I am, you know now for sure. Anyways, I have a wonderful guest, but before we bring him on, I want to tell you what's going on with Stars with a Z, Psychics.com, and MysticLivingToday.com. MysticLivingToday.com, I just celebrated my 25th anniversary with the January issue, so if you go over there, you can scroll down just a tiny bit, and you'll see to open the book, and that's our Flip magazine. I kept both of them, the text version and the Flip, because, you know, that alone has been going on since 1999, and that's a long time. And so there's so much content and keywords, so a lot of SEO, and my webmaster said, if we take that down, you're like starting from the beginning, so we chose not to do that. So you can watch, you can view the text version, which is exactly like the open book, the Flip magazine, but the Flip is really... really, really awesome. I have cover every month. Well, we have a new cover coming for February, but I don't know if we're going to keep the same cover or not. I haven't decided, but it's beautiful. And I have beautiful people that work with me to put this all together. I don't do this all myself. I mean, I do the text version myself, but I send everything over to my gal in the UK, if you can imagine. And she puts it in, and then I go look at it and approve it. And then I have another gal in Kenya who takes every single thing in the magazine and puts it on my Instagram accounts and everywhere else. Isn't that wonderful? I mean, what a team. I have really a great team. I'm very, very blessed. So that's that. Now, stars with a Z, psychics.com. Yes, $1.99 a minute for all readings. We have them in packages, and the minutes do not expire. That site, as everybody knows, well, it's over 12 years old now, and I don't know where the time went. I think about the magazine, and I think, oh, my gosh. One of my authors said to me, how do you get all these articles and everything? Well, I didn't in the very beginning, you know, 24 years ago. I had to beg for stuff. Please send me something. Please send me something. I mean, it was very small. This issue is 100 pages. But these people that have written write for the magazine every single month. I ask, I receive. And then you get to know the publicists, and then you get to know the publishing houses, which I know so many of them. And my love for it is still there after all this time. And it's just growing, so I'm very, very blessed. If you'd like to submit something, you're welcome to do that. You just send it to starscast@mysticlivingtoday.com. That's STARZ like in zebra, CAST like in Tom. And I'll get it and send an image, send any credits you want me to use. Make sure it's your material. Same thing with images. I'm very picky about those. I don't use anything that's taken from someplace else. And you have to remember, if it's on Google, it's owned by someone. It is. If you do a search on it, you'll find out that somebody way back when, that was actually theirs. And then yours truly gets in trouble. So I always tell everybody to go over to Deposit Photos, take something from there, take a picture, a real picture, and that kind of thing, and off we go. But anyways, okay, that's enough of me talking. Well, not talking, but enough of me talking about what I do. And I want to bring in my guests. Now, you're going to be thrilled with this guest because this man has, I mean, talk about spirituality. This is it. And I was just saying to him earlier, some people say they're spiritual, but they really are not. They think they are. They think to be really spiritual, you have to be so giving and loving and kind. I mean, you have to, that's how you have to be. But anyways, I'm going to bring in my guest today. Welcome, David Gagan. How are you?
Hi, Natalie. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. And I can really talk, can I? Yes.
You're doing good.
Yes. Okay. Well, you have written a book called Our Eternal Existence, A Metaphysical Perspective of Reality. We're going to talk about your book. But first, I want to talk about how David got his feet wet into the realm that we're in. How did you begin? We all begin somewhere. And sometimes my listeners will say, well, that's all and good. He really has written these books and all of that, but how did he get started? So tell us a little bit how you got started.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, a teenager, my dad was an avid reader of all kinds of things, and he'd give me books like Velikovsky's World in Collision, and he'd say, hey, why don't you read this? And then after I'd read it, he'd say, well, what'd you think? And I'd say, I don't have a clue what that's all about. And then he'd give me more books and more books, and they were fascinating books. I loved them. But I couldn't help but notice that I wasn't being taught any of it in school. So I was always very curious. I was curious about religion. I remember about when I was around 15, I remember sitting I was brought up Episcopalian. And I remember sitting in the church and looking around, seeing the beautiful stained glass windows and the robes on the minister and such, and thinking, I don't know what the answer is, but this probably isn't it. And I spent my life searching. I of course had to go make a living, so I became an engineer and such. But all throughout my life, I would be reading these things, and I searched and searched through everything that I could find. Until I started finding some answers. So it was, I think I was driven to this from when I was a child. Quite frankly, I was curious about who are we, where are we, and why are we here.
Exactly, but you know you're going to find this really odd. I was raised a Catholic. I'm Italian. Okay, but I had to go to catechism and all that stuff. And when I was about 8 or 9 years old, I sat in church. I looked around just like you. This is no joke. I looked around and I thought, all this gold, all this, you know, and they're passing baskets out to put money in, and you got an envelope with it to put the money in. And I really questioned. I thought to myself, isn't God everywhere? Why do I have to talk to him here? So you see, you and I started questioning at an early age. My friends were not like me at all. I didn't even tell them that. They probably would have said, what's the matter with you? You know, you do it this way, and that's how you're taught, and that's how you're raised, and you take all the sacraments, and that's it. But I was actually baptized a Greek Catholic. So there was a lot of hoop-de-doo when I wanted to make my communion. They weren't going to let me because I was not baptized a Roman Catholic. But anyways, isn't it funny how you did the same thing basically as I did? Now, of course, my life went different. I went to school, you know, did all that stuff and ended up going to beauty school. I didn't even graduate from high school because all the kids that I would be graduating with, they were so, they were not like me. I mean, I guess I didn't realize how smart I was. I mean, I didn't show it, and I didn't think it. But compared to them, they couldn't hold a candle to me. And I thought, I'm going to go a whole year. Actually, I didn't have to go a whole year. With them? No, because all my friends graduated. I did not. So I decided to go to beauty school. But I think when you start questioning when you're really young, that sets you on your path, and sometimes you don't even know it. So I didn't really do anything about it. I mean, I was an avid reader like you, but I don't, you know, you didn't get taught anything in school, even in catechism, which I'm sure you had to probably take if you were a Catholic. You weren't, it was almost like you were brainwashed. in a way. And I don't say that in a bad way, because there's nothing wrong with being taught, because you were taught certain things. You were given guidelines. You had to follow this, which is good when you grow up. You have to understand that there are rules, and you just can't go helter-skelter and do whatever you feel like doing. I mean, you have to get up at a certain time. You got to go to school, all of that. But it wasn't until – now, I was born and raised in Detroit. I'm a Motown girl. It wasn't until I got acquainted with one psychic. I kind of questioned what she could do, right? Because I wasn't exposed to that kind of stuff. But then I got in charge of this huge group in Michigan, and I got to talk to a lot of them. And you know what my question was to myself was, why can't I do what they can do? You know, they were reading cards and all of that. And I just thought, I just don't think that's me. I really don't think that's what I am. And I didn't even know. I didn't even know. And some people that I've had on my show have been I like to call them a higher realm, because we really, you are and I am. It's not about the money. It's about reaching. It's about showing people that there is another way. But, how did you come to write your first book? Now, this was not your first book.
No, I worked for 40-some years, in a number of different jobs, and then I retired, and I retired for the purpose of writing a book. What I wanted to do is, I'd done all this reading, and I'd done all this studying, and I had some very strong opinions of things, but I wanted to see if I could articulate them. And it took me 6 months after I retired to get the business world out of my head before I could even start. And then it's kind of daunting to start with a plain piece of paper and say, okay, what do you believe? And that's basically what I did. And I did it, and that was for The Endless Journey. That was the first book. And I really started that for myself. I didn't start it for anybody else. I just tried to pull together my thoughts and how I saw the world and myself. And that was basically what it was. It was primarily the reason I retired, because I wanted to do that.
Isn't it strange how we get carried into something? Well, I just feel it's all divine order. I mean, there are no coincidences, and you are guided, even if you don't think you are. And sometimes it's a learning thing, a learning curve. Sometimes you think, oh, God, why did I do that? I mean, that was stupid. I mean, yeah, but it's a learning phase for you. It's something that you had to do to get to the next place, and then the next, and the next, and the next. See, that's how I look at my life, and I'm sure it's the same for you. And you wrote this, and now you wrote this other book, and I guess it was released on my birthday, November 24th, huh?
Yeah, it was in the UK. It was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Got released in the US December 1st.
Okay. Well, I saw November 24th, and I thought, this guy's got to be great. It's my birthday. But anyways, now I have to ask you this. When you were growing up, did you have brothers and sisters?
I did have an older sister and a younger brother. Still have them. They're still around.
Okay. Were they like you?
They were not interested. They were extremely, extremely religious and Christians, and they were not interested in looking past the Christian doctrine,
and that kind of makes sense, because if I would have told the father now what I'm doing, probably would have cringed. Oh my God, she's off on a bad path there. This is a bad path.
It's funny. I talked to, I don't know if you're familiar with the entity Michael. Shepherd Hoodwin is a very good channel for him. But I talked to him one time, and I said, hey, what past life influenced this life that I have, most influenced it? And he said, you were you and your daughter, youngest daughter, were both professors in Budapest in the 1500s. She taught mathematics, which she can't hardly believe because she hates it now. But and I taught something that was similar to sociology, but not exactly. It was it was something that we don't exactly have today. But it was about life, and I was extremely unhappy at the time with what I was teaching, because I knew that it wasn't right, but I didn't know what was right. So this life, I came back highly influenced because the information is available between the web and such like that, and all the other books and things that have been written. So so I came down here with a purpose to try to figure this out, as opposed to just kind of stumbling into it.
Yeah, I haven't really looked into myself. I just kind of I worked for America Online for like 6 years and got my feet wet a little bit in some of the metaphysics, not a lot of it, because even then it was not like it is today. My first site, planetstars.com, was just a site. I didn't have any ideas of what I was going to do with it. Who'd ever tell me I'd have two more? I would never have guessed it. But I think if we find something that we really love, then it's right. Then you know it's right. What you're doing is right. And
yeah, you can feel it.
You can feel it. Like, but there was a time now back in the fall, because my other site was not doing that good, and it actually supports everything. Not me, but it supports, the site fees and all of that stuff and the magazine. And I thought to myself, I don't know what I'll do if I can't do this. And everybody around me, they're just of the mundane world. They don't get it. Even my son said to me, "Mom, this upsets you so much. Why do you keep doing it?" And I said, that's a good question. I said, I really love doing it. And so I really don't have another answer for you. And he did that to me for a while, because he saw I was so upset, because I think I was upset too, David, because I thought, what am I going to do, watch television all day? That's not me. I mean, I use both sides of my brain. I have three monitors. I'm so used to going over here, then over there, then over there. What am I going to do? I couldn't imagine it. And I just thought to myself, that will be the end of you. You will not live very long. So something happened. You probably will understand this. I talk to God every morning, or periodically during the day, especially if I don't like what's going on. But I will talk, and the only thing I ask for is open the doors for me so I can peek and see if it's something that will be good for the sites that I have, the people that work for me, and what I love to do so much. And that next morning, I got a call from one of my gals who works for me. She says, I've got about 30 of us who want you to do phone readings on stars. I thought about doing, I had done this before, and it's just a whole nother ball game. But you see, I got that spark that I needed, that feeling of, see, you're not done. You're really not done. You can keep going with this, But sometimes it gets to be really scary. I don't have a husband now. He died of Alzheimer's, and that's a whole other story. But I think we're on a path, and sometimes we get, I like to say, thrown in a ditch a little bit sometimes, and then we pick ourselves back up again and walk that path again. But my whole thing is, I will continue to be of service, because that's what I am. That's who I am. I know. I already know. It's not about money. It's about being of service and being great with beautiful people and loving them and kind and helping everybody. And that's what I do. To a fault, probably, David. And you probably do the same thing. I mean, I don't think you're all about the money. I mean, sure, it's great to write a book, and sure, it's great if it sells. But beyond that, it's the words that you put in the book that's important. It really, really is. Now, tell me, how did you come up with this title, our eternal existence, a metaphysical perspective of reality.
Well,
did you just sit down and write it, or did it come to you, or what?
It just came to me, I think. The book, Our Eternal Existence, is a broad explanation of, you know, who we are, where we are, and why we're here. It talks about the universe that we're in and what's behind it, and our own, the human condition and our psyche and how it all works. And it talks about, you know, how we end up impacting our own life. You know, a lot of times we have a feeling that or we have a tendency to believe that maybe we're a victim of fate or somebody else, and the rest of the world is, you know, whether it's our boss or our spouse or our,
they're out to
you know,
get us.
Our, you know,
yeah.
whoever is
yeah.
causing us all this trouble. And what we don't realize, it's really us. You know, we cause everything that happens to us. And once you realize that, you also realize that we're the only ones that can fix it also. So what I tried to explain in the book is how we're causing our own trouble and how to do something about it and how to change it. And this goes on life after life after life. I mean, you know, this is not unique that we're here. We came here and we chose to come here. And on some of our bad days, we might be wondering what we were thinking of.
What in the world was I thinking? Yeah.
Right. It must have seemed like a good idea at the time.
But I take it back. I don't want it. Yeah. No, you're
yeah.
right. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm sure you do. I know I question, and I don't know what it is. It's part of just being a human, I guess, is what am I really doing? Why am I here? I do ask myself that sometimes. And then I'm thrown into, it's time to do the magazine. It's time to do this. So my question is really, I guess it's answered, but it's not answered. Maybe it's the same for you. Because we have our focus. And see, somebody who's written a book, I don't envy you, but I do in a way, because I have this fairy tale kind of, sort of, in my head. It's about a couple who've been looking for each other over many lifetimes. And talk about that, you know, that's like reincarnation. That's like past lives, and they keep missing each other in previous times. But this time, they connect. And it's very, very – I know what the book is going to – I know what it's going to be like. I know exactly. But to sit down – how did you sit down and write your first book? I ask everybody that's an author, because I guess you can't be pulled in many directions, or you just say from 1 to 2 p.m., I'm going to sit and write. Is that what you do? What do you do?
Well, I spent hours. It wasn't 1 to 2. It might have been four to 6 hours a day writing.
Okay.
And writing and rewriting and organizing and reorganizing. And then I had a good friend who I worked with, who I had talked about a lot of this, and he bought into it. And he ended up reading the book. And I think we had, just between him and I, we had probably 19 revisions to that first book. Because,
yeah.
you know, I'd send him something and he'd say, I don't understand what you're talking about, Dave.
Right,
so
right.
Then,
so
he,
it was good
why.
Because he was
right.
like somebody on the outside that would be
exactly.
reading the book for the first time. And if he can't understand
exactly.
what you're trying to say, that's excellent. Oh, you were lucky to have him.
I was very fortunate to have him. And I had him for the second book. I'm not sure I'll ever do a third book because he died about a year and a half ago, sadly.
I'm sorry.
But it was, you know, it was one of those things. He never wrote a word in the book, but he was a great mirror to bounce things off of.
Mm-hmm.
And but you know, that's what you have to do. You just have to sit down and put something on a piece of paper, and, you know, you try to go with an outline. You know, I started with an outline, but the outline I started with was nothing like what I ended with. But it got me started. It got me pointed in a direction that
right.
got me off the dime. You know, you just need to go after it. That's all. And,
yeah, and I have the name of it. It's very spiritual, but it's to get people to believe in things they cannot see because they really are there. That's how I end my show. That's in my magazine. That's my calling card, if you will. That's what I am. But maybe one day I'll get bored. Not bored. Oh God, I'm never bored. But maybe one day I'll sit down and I have started it, but then I don't go back to it. I mean, I have it on Word, you know, and I have it locked. Nobody can take it. But not that anybody's going
to
take it.
You have to be driven to it. To write a book, you have to be driven.
You do. You have to want to get that message out there, and time is of the essence. I think you're right about that. It's just so important. Now, I have some questions that my gal, who does part of my show page for me, she wrote these. Yeah, she asked him this. What are the keys to a better life?
I think the most important thing is realizing that you have control of your life and that the problems that you have, you can solve those problems. You know,
yeah.
and you look at your beliefs, and your beliefs are causing your problems. Your inner soul, your inner self manifests what it thinks you want to have and the experiences that it thinks you want. And so it's your self-limiting beliefs that are causing your problems. If, for example, you don't have enough money and you think you'll always be poor, and bothers you, and you're thinking about that a lot of times, well, your inner self says, all right, you know, he or she wants to experience not having enough money,
so here you go.
That's what they have.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens if you're not well. You know, your inner self will say,
I'll never.
You
that's
know,
true.
Exactly. And you and your parents died of cancer and you're sure that you're gonna get cancer. And then now you start reading all the articles on it. And then you start listening to the guys on television. And you know these television ads says, well, I'll probably have cancer today.
Yeah.
And it's you know, it's just ridiculous.
You're so
but
good.
You focus
yeah.
on it. And,
it's all
and if
true.
You focus, yeah. And if you focus on this, you will draw it to you. You will make it happen. You will create it. Now, that's not the only reason that you could have, that you could get sick. You can get sick because your inner self says, hey, slow down. You're going too fast. You know, you got to,
right.
you're driving your body crazy. So there are other reasons that you can have it. But, your beliefs are 9/10 of what's happening in your life. And maybe it's more like 100%. And what you need to do is you need to look at yourself and look at your beliefs and say, what do I believe about my life that's self-limiting? What is it that I truly, way deep down inside, believe? And if you can change that, if you can recognize that, and don't, you know, and just focus on the biggest problem that you have, the thing that's bugging you the most. Don't try to fix everything overnight. Just look at the things that really got you going at right now and saying, okay, what are my beliefs about this thing? What, you know, and you'll realize that you're the culprit on this stuff.
I mean, yeah, my own worst enemy. Excuse me.
It.
You're right. No, you're right. We have an issue right now with, and you're so right on with what's going on for me, is this ability to do these phone readings. And it sounds simple, but it's not. And my webmaster is he's a young guy. He's 41, you know, and he's a great coder, but that's all he does is code. And I've known him. He's worked for me for 16 years. I know him well. But sometimes he has a habit of trying to influence me and say, well, you probably can't do this. And he wrote me something today. And I sat there and I thought, you want to make a bet? I am going to find a way. I am going to find a way. You know, and that's what he says about me. He said, I cannot keep up with you. He said, I think that I've got it, and I know, oh, she's going to do – and you passed me up. He said, I'm in one county, and you're three counties over. That's how he explains it to people. But I think that's what happened to me back in the fall when I was thinking about how can I continue on with this? How can I not? And I got my own answer, and things are turning around, and I'm feeling more positive. But, you know, David, it's really tough when you're in that, where you're in it, and, like, say, money, you need the money to do this. If you don't have the money to do this, you're not going to do it. Oh, but there's going to be a way. Just has to be a way. And so that's what I have been doing, and I changed it. I think I changed it for myself. And today when I saw what he wrote to me, and I wrote him back, I said, well, I know to you this is a dream. I said, but I am not going to stop. That's what I wrote him. He's probably sitting there thinking, oh, God, here we go. She's going to find it. She's going to find the answer because I know anything is possible. I know. And I don't even know that I have proof. I don't know. It's just a belief system like you. It's a belief system that we have. Sometimes we get thrown off a course. You know, sometimes we have doubts. I mean, we're not perfect. But that's part of it, too. You know, and I think about, I'm sure I'm older than you, but I think about my life, and I have so much I want to do. And most of my friends are all gone. They've all passed. And so I even talk to myself and I'll say, okay, I'm still here. Thank goodness I'm very healthy. I'm doing good. I have my wits about me. I function really well. And I'll even say to myself, I wonder why. Well, I have to erase that right away. Because I have a job to do and I know it. And that's to bring people like yourself on my show. That's to have them in my magazine. That's to have them on my other site, to bring beautiful people that you can talk to that are not going to rip you off. And so I have a purpose, you know. But you do question yourself. I'm sure you have. I'm sure you have to yourself, too.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
It's a natural thing for people to do. And I tell you, the hardest thing in the world is to change your beliefs. Absolutely the hardest thing.
It is.
But you need to, you know, if you've got a problem and it's really bothering you, that's probably the only way you can fix it, changing your beliefs. But so you have to root around and find out what your beliefs are, and that requires a lot of honesty that none of us really like to get involved with, but you need it. And that's the only way you can, you can solve a lot of your problems. You know, the government's not going to solve it. You know, your spouse isn't going to solve it. Nobody can solve it. It's your problem. You created it, and you need to deal with it. But you can't.
Right.
It's just hard, but you can.
Yeah, it really, really is. And, you know, like this situation for me is it's just seeking out other avenues for me. I just know I'm going to figure it out. Because it's something, it's part of my dream. It's part of what I want to offer. And I've got all of these people that want to work for me. And I even asked the girl this. She's probably my age, I guess. I don't know. I said, why do they want to work for me? She said, for one thing, they've heard about you on the Internet. They know what a beautiful soul you are. This is what she told me. They know what a beautiful soul you are. They're being ripped off by other sites. If they don't do something, they get reprimanded or they get taken off without even a warning. And she said, they just know how fair you are. Well, that's some of the greatest compliments I could hear. And you pay on time. And yes, I've been on the Internet a long time. Yes, I have. And I'm as honest as the day is long, and I'm not going to change. Now, I have another question. Why do we choose a more difficult life? Why do we set ourselves up to fail? What is the reason for it?
that we can evolve faster. The whole reason that we came here, this is one of the most difficult places that you can come, as a soul can come. And we do it because it's if we succeed, and everybody succeeds to a certain extent, you can. It's a shortcut for evolution. You can take the easy road, but it just takes you longer. And the sooner you evolve to a certain level, the more interesting existence becomes. So we come here and we take on these very difficult tasks, and we do it because we're going to learn from it. Our soul learns from the experiences, and we're really down here representing our soul. I mean, the soul is part of us, but we're what I call the ego, that we think of as our I, is a small part of our much greater and wiser soul. But the soul can't experience this illusion that we live in, this reality, because it will see through it. So we have to do that for it, and that's what our body and our five senses are all about, so that we can experience and we can perceive this reality and we can perceive these problems that maybe aren't real problems, but they're problems for us because we have to deal with them. And therefore, we are able to learn from these experiences, and our soul is able to have these experiences through us. All of our experiences are psychological and not physical. The physical simply is a mechanism that allows us to have psychological experiences. So we have these difficult experiences, and we learn from them, and we do it because of evolution, and we want to evolve as rapidly as we possibly can. So we take these things on.
Yeah, as difficult as they are sometimes, and I know, but I don't know. It's just sometimes it's really, like last fall was really tough on me. But it was like something was dragging me along. Come on. No, you can't stay there. Come on. You can do this. You're here to do this. So
we all get these things, and we just need to accept them go by. You know, you got to deal with it, and then don't fret over it, any more than you have to, and then forget about it and move on, and then you'll have another problem. But that's all right. you do one problem.
Yeah, it rushes
at a time.
To fill the void.
I live on Sanibel, and Hurricane. Hurricane Ian wiped out the whole island a little over a year ago. And so everybody had to rebuild their homes and such like that. But it was something that I undoubtedly signed up for. You know, if a problem like that occurs, you've agreed to it somewhere along the line, whether you like it or not. And so you deal with it. You just say, okay, step one, step two, step three, and you just deal with it. And that's what everybody did to the best of everybody's capability. But that happens to everybody. You know, we have these things in life, and that's what makes our evolution happen. And we shouldn't let it get us down as much as it can. And, you certainly can look at yourself and say, geez, that's some fine mess I'm in. But you can get out of it, too.
You can mess it all up.
You acknowledge that you made your own mess, which, quite frankly, we all did anyway. No matter what it looks like, somebody else did. We made the mess, and that's fine. We made the mess for a purpose. All these messes that we get ourselves into, psychological messes, we did for a purpose, so we can learn from them, so we can have an experience. And if you realize that you're growing, I think it's a lot easier to handle. If you realize that, hey, wait a minute, nobody did this to me. I did this to me because it's good for me. It doesn't appear to be good for me, but it is good for me. And I think if you can take that attitude, it can really help you in dealing with the day-to-day crisis that come along.
And we all have them. Nobody is without them. I don't care who they are.
Nobody.
they're dealing with something somehow.
Right.
Every human being is.
We may look at them and say, boy, they're living the high life. But,
right, but they're not.
They're having the same kind of problems as we are. And especially, you know, people that have so much money, well, maybe the money's the problem, and you know, that they have to learn to deal with. You know, you don't know what other people's problems are. You don't know where they've been. You don't know where they're going, and you don't know where they're at. And you don't need to. All you need to do is understand yourself and not worry about what's happening to other people. I mean, you help them. Don't get me wrong. You know, just because somebody signed up to have a serious problem doesn't mean we shouldn't help them as we can and if we can.
Right.
But it's just one of these learning things that we're all doing. We're all involved in this. And
we're all
and we'll
in
all
this together, no matter how we look at it.
We're all one. We're all one. We're all part of a single universal consciousness. All our minds are tied together. And quite frankly, what another person learns having hardship benefits us. And it benefits us because we're able to learn from that. And our hardships benefit other people because they will learn from that. We're all trying to learn. We live in a research and development universe here, and we're all trying to learn. And the key is just trying to assist other people as best we can.
That's
and
right.
and then take care of ourselves as best we can.
And these little things that we make to be like huge mountains that we have to climb, like the issues that are going on for me. I dealt with an Alzheimer's person that lived in my house that tried to kill me every day.
Yeah.
But somebody asked me, I don't know how long ago, it's been a long time now, but they asked me, how did you do it? I said, I just did it. And I stand tall that I did it. I did it myself. Nobody helped me. I did it. I said, he did say to me, so you must be really something. I said, I think I am. I said, but so are you.
Yeah.
He said, no, I could never have done what you did. I said, how do you know? If you're not in that situation, how do you know? I bet you could.
Yeah. We're all much greater than we realize.
Yeah. Yeah. And he asked me, he said, why don't you write about us? Because I don't want to go back there. I don't want that. I don't want to go back to that.
Right.
It was very difficult.
I can understand that.
It was very difficult. Yeah. He said, I'd read the book. I'd buy it. I said, well, no, I don't. Mine was unique. And, Jesus came to me. I had help you couldn't see. There's just no doubt in my mind. And so I just leave it there now, you know. I just put it where it belongs, but I don't want to visit it again. I don't. Now I have another question here. Let me look at this little. Boy, she was just full of questions, isn't she? Let's see. How can our inner self solve our problems and guide us to the experiences we need?
What it does is it manifests. It manifests what we believe in, what our expectations are. And what it actually does is it creates the circumstances that we want to have, and things like synchronicity. You know, we think synchronicity is potluck, but and an amazing set of circumstances, and it is amazing, but it's not that it's luck. It's that what synchronicity is our self, our inner self, setting up. Circumstances that will allow us to have specific experiences, and our inner self might set up a meeting between us and somebody else that's two decades down the line, and it's because it lays out this blueprint for us that we can change anytime we choose, and if we change it, well, then that meeting doesn't happen. But if we continue on a path and happens to be part of our pre-life plan, then that meeting does happen, and it may be simply somebody introducing us to somebody else, or it may be somebody coming into our life that is going to stay there for a while. So it's it's the world that that we live in. So you know what we need to do is it's we can live a better life by looking at our beliefs and that's what the inner self does. And quite frankly, it's interesting. The dream world is really a different reality, and I won't go into all that because we don't have time. But the fact of the matter is the dreams that we have, one, we only see a snapshot of them, so we really don't understand them. But what they are is the inner self going into our past lives. And when you die, you haven't resolved all your issues, so they still need to get resolved. And mm-hmm. so the past life lives, those issues, are chosen by our inner self. And those experiences in our dreams are solving some of those problems. So these problems that we have are continually worked on and developed, and our inner soul is doing that. But the thing is, we are the one living this circumstance right now, this particular life. So we take priority. So if you want to solve a problem, and you want your inner self to do that and help you, what you need to do is ask it. And what you do is right before you go to bed, you say, okay, here's the problem that I've got, and visualize yourself not having that problem. So the inner self knows what we're talking about. You can put a note under your pillow if you want, and do that for a while, and your inner self will solve that problem for you.
Right.
It does.
It will.
It can do it in your dreams, or it can do it at other times. But it will solve your problems for you. But you have to ask for it, and you have to make sure it knows that that's important for you, and that's what you want it to do. And you get top priority. Not none of the past lives. They got plenty of time to work that out. You get top priority.
Yeah. That's for sure. I love it. I love how you talk about it. See, I knew this was going to be good today. Now, I have one more question. How can we attain the direct and immediate spiritual assistance that everyone needs? Well, you kind of answered it already.
Yeah, I basically, you ask for it, and you change your, you decide what you want. And if, for example, you've got a bum knee, okay, and you're limping around and you don't want, and it's not like it's, in terrible shape, but it's not in, whatever, you got a bum knee. So, and you want to go play tennis. So what you do is you visualize yourself. Maybe, half a dozen times a day. You think of yourself for a minute or two, shut your eyes, think of yourself and visualize yourself doing the type of things that you want to do. Say play tennis. You're out there and you're running around and you're playing tennis. And you don't visualize yourself getting better, because all that does is strengthen and reinforces your problem. You visualize yourself as being better. And so you say, okay,
right.
I'm you see yourself doing this stuff. And as you do that, you are telling you over time, and we're not talking horrendous amounts of time, weeks we're talking. Over a relatively short period of time, your inner self will actually fix that knee for you. It's amazing.
Well, yeah, it is. You bring up stuff we're so in line. My background was tennis. I worked in big clubs. I miss it a lot. I think of myself, wanting to play again. I could probably play half court, but because of my age, now I don't know this, I probably couldn't run from the baseline like I used to run like the wind before.
Well, you won't run as fast, but that doesn't mean you can't run.
That's right. That's right. And, if you're hitting against someone who is, so long as they're not 30 years younger than you or more closer to your age, it's going to be the same. It's not going to be that off balance. Somebody said, well, play pickleball. That doesn't interest me. I'm a tennis person. And I was in two big clubs in Michigan. I loved every minute of it. I really, really did. You know, and here in South Carolina, I used to play with my husband, of course, but that ended, and I haven't played since. But it's sometimes life can throw you these curves, and it's how you deal with them and how you handle them. I don't get upset about it.
I had two bad knees. I had a bad shoulder, all from tennis. The bad shoulders because I was playing with 20-year-olds that had scholarships to tennis, and they were hitting it hard, and I thought I could hit it at hard,
too.
Who could
run you all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. But, hey, I'm 78, and I play on the 50-year-olds team. So, you know, you can, it's mind over matter. You can do this. You can do it.
Yeah.
Don't self-limit. Don't self-limit.
Right. Right. And, I think there's things that we all have on our list, and I don't like to call it a bucket list because that means, oh, God, I'm going to die. I'm close to death. No. You should make it, these are things I would like to do, not a bucket list. A bucket list is like, it's the end. You're working towards the end. No, I'm not doing that. No. These are the things I would love to do. There are certain things that I would really love to do, but I don't dwell upon it, and it all costs money, and I don't dwell upon that either because, you know, I need to talk to myself before I go to sleep at night. I have great dreams. I have great visions during the day. I see myself doing a lot of things that, if I told anybody, they'd think I was crazy. So I don't tell them, of course, because you don't want anybody to throw a whammy at you or throw water on your ideas, hot water, and say, well, you're not going to do that. That's stupid. Really?
They can't help you anyway. You can help yourself. So.
Yeah. So, and you're in a perfect place to play tennis. I did play tennis when we were there a couple of times. And I have a question to ask about where you live. How did you recoup? I mean, it was devastation. I mean, I think you probably got hit the most with that hurricane. We had some residual, but I didn't lose anything. I've got all these big, huge 80-year-old pine trees, and they didn't move. And you had this just come and sweep everything away. How did you do that? Did you have to go relocate someplace else? How did you do that?
Yeah, I had to live off the island for about 2.5 months. And what I did in the beginning is this neighbor of mine and I and my contractor got in a boat. I rented a boat, and we came over here, and we had to mitigate the damage, which means we had to throw away everything on the first floor, and, you know, my kitchen and such is upstairs, but I have a bedroom and utility room and such, and you could get in my garage, and you could see the opposite side of the house because there were no walls there. Everything from 4 feet down was all
just blown away, blown to bits.
Well, it wasn't blown so much. It was just
water.
Was wet. I had 2.5 feet
of
water.
Yeah.
So
water is very
powerful.
And
that started rising. Well, it starts rising, and then you get black mold. So there was a lot of serious issues. So we had to mitigate it. Then we had to dry out the house. And, of course, there's no power on the island.
So you just let the air dry it? Is that what you did?
Well, we had to bring
generators
on and set up the fans and try to get the house dried out, and that took several weeks of itself, and then we slowly had to rebuild everything, and of course, you know, everybody else had problems too. So fortunately, my contractor, I had done a lot of work with him, so he gave myself and my friends some special focus, and he said, "Hey, I'll get you back in your house. I won't get you finished, but I'll get you back in your house so you can live in it." And it took him 2.5 months to do that.
That was not bad at all.
I was one of the first back on the island. And so we moved back. A friend and I moved back. He's across the street from me, basically. And then we slowly but surely got everything else done. You know, the lanai cage was lying in my pool. And, you know, you just had to keep working with everybody. And I didn't really finish getting my house done until about a month ago. So I spent over a year trying to get the house put back together. I mean, I had tarps on the side of the house, and I had to get put new siding on it. I mean, it's just on and on. But all you did is you just did one thing at a time.
You tackle one thing, and then you go to the next. But
that's all
where,
you can do.
When you went off the island, where did you go to live for those few months? I mean, did you have an idea? People listening that get hit by stuff, and this is very beneficial, they say, oh, my God, what'll I do? Where will I go? Somehow.
Well, everybody had to find a place. I was fortunate that I had a lady friend that I was able to stay with. And so that was just she had a house off the island. And although she had a foot of water in her garage and lost her car, my car was just high enough. It was in the garage during the hurricane. We had about 15 inches of water, which was just enough. My car had big wheels on it, so it was okay, but I was the only car in the street that was okay. Hers had to be replaced. It was a mess. There's no question. And everybody, there's still a lot of people not on this island. There's nobody in those condominiums. There's just a few people start coming back, and there's probably 10,000 condominium units, and there's probably 100 people in them. And so there's a lot of people still not on the island.
They're displaced.
They're doing the best they can under the circumstances. They might have bought a place in Fort Myers, or they might have, a lot of the people just left and said, hey, okay, I'll wait 6 months and let the other, let everybody get all straightened out, and they came back, and it turns out that they had just as big a problem 6 months later, it's still a huge problem, but it's getting better. It's getting better.
I'm so glad to hear that, because for people that don't know about Sanibel Island, it has white sand for its beaches, and I remember when we went there, there was something about it. There was a big tennis center there when I was there. I didn't go to that. You had to be a member. But there was just something about that place, and I can still see it in my head, what it was like. I just felt so good there. You probably feel good there, too. That's why.
I do, right? And that's why I stay here, even with the storms. I love it here. It's probably 80-some percent of the island is natural preserves.
I know, it's
so
beautiful.
It's just a very nice place. Most of the time, it's like heaven, and occasionally, for a day or so, it turns into hell, and then you have to deal with it.
Hell in a handbag.
Well,
I'm in South Carolina, so we
get
– we had one where we had to evacuate. But my son said to me, that's the last time we're doing that. And I kind of looked at him. He said, unless it's a direct hit, like unless everything is going to be taken away, we are not leaving. Because it was a nightmare to get back. Because you have the National Guard at every entrance, and they won't let you in. And the traffic and the – I remember that. And we had dogs and – oh, well, we have 90 seconds. I have to go soon here. Anyways, I have had such a great time. I want to mention your website before we go. It's David Gagin, DavidGaggin.com. And I thank you so much. And maybe for this next issue, I will email you for something from your book to put in it. I would love to have that. And bless you.
I would be happy. Yeah, email it. I'd be happy to give you something. The book is Our Eternal Existence, A Metaphysical Perspective of Reality. You can go to my website, davidgaggin.com, and you can order it there. And it'll take you basically to Amazon, where you can order it. And I think the readers will enjoy it.
Oh, they will.
They will.
I don't have it yet, but I intend to get it because it's right up my alley in my my array of books that I have here. But thank you. You're wonderful. And I will be emailing you. And for everybody, stay tuned for next week. We'll be back, same time, same station, I believe. Yes. And remember, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. Bye-bye. Have a great day.